Laurel LeBou back on Health Talk, brought to you in part by Blessed Trinity Home Healthcare, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. We are talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day and having that talk to designate someone to speak for you when you can no longer speak for yourself. Our guests today are John Carney and Suzanne Morse from Crossroads Hospice of Kansas. That's right. And then Samantha Shepherd from Shepherd Law Group. 576-7798 is the number. If you have a question, 576-7798 is the number. And we were talking during the break about selecting someone that will actually speak for you and designating that agent. And Suzanne, you were talking about some different scenarios that make it difficult for you to do your work as a nurse practitioner.
Along with what Samantha said on talking about selecting the agent and making sure that agent knows their responsibility, you know, that agent needs to consent that they will take the baton up, they will make those decisions, and they'll be available. I've come across many situations where you make that phone call and they're not able to take the phone call and deal with the crisis at hand, and puts the patient in a very precarious situation, and the healthcare team having sometimes to make decisions that should come from the family or the agent.
And these may be people necessarily that are out of state or just simply aren't inclined, even if they're local, they're just not inclined to jump into that situation.
I've seen it both ways. I've seen them just down the street a few blocks, and I've seen them out of town, and they just can't bring themselves to take the time.
Samantha, do you see that as an elder law attorney as well?
I do. I see people who have just not taken the time to tell the people they've chosen as their attorney in facts or agents. I've also seen lots of people in the situation with no one at all. So I prefer to see a situation where we have an uncooperative person, at least someone to call and badger. But I empathize with Suzanne having to the scenario that she discussed, calling someone and needing an answer right then and not getting a return call for, what did you say, Suzanne?
Sometimes it's the end of the day. Sometimes it's never, or it's, I can't deal with this right now.
And so you may have someone who's in a situation where a decision has to be made right then on a medical decision that needs to be made right then.
Well, I think the really important point here is that the healthcare professional is turning to the patient and the family representative to help make this decision. All of us want to be able to say what it is we want and what we want from our doctors and our medical teams when it comes time to make a very difficult decision. We don't want to have to rely on the healthcare team to make that decision for us. That's the reason we have these documents. And again, I think, you know, Suzanne's point is that if you ask somebody and they're reluctant or they're unable or they just can't handle it, go to somebody who can. Get somebody in there who's going to be able to be your advocate and your spokesperson. That is the most important thing.
576-7798 is the number if you have a question for our panel this evening. Suzanne, do you then tend to have to deal with family battles that are just very difficult to deal with?
Oh, absolutely. All the time, even with advanced directives in place.
So then how do you attempt to resolve those?
Sitting down with family, educating the family, group meetings, and just really working with them. And sometimes you just have to lay the medical chart out there and say, this is what's going on. Here's our expectation. And here's the outcome that's going to happen.
576-7798 is the number if you have a question. Samantha, as an attorney, what kind of advice do you have for people in choosing that person who will speak for them?
Well, I would like to start by saying I'm almost to the point where I wish that every person who goes to get a driver's license is handed the form. So we all should have it. What advice would I give when counseling to select a person? I would say what I actually say to people when they're in front of me. We'd separate decisions into financial decisions and medical decisions. They're entirely different documents in my practice. So we put aside that whole who's going to take care of your money, who's going to pay your employees, who's not going to rob you. Put that aside. In Missouri, you are the queen of your body, sometimes I say to my little old ducks. You are in charge. As much as you think that it's a decision that you can pass off to your daughter-in-law or whomever it might be who's a nurse, you're in charge until you're no longer in charge, until you can't communicate in any way. So that doesn't have to be able to write a treatise. It means to be able to make eye contact, nod your head, hold someone's hand, convey, I don't want this anymore. When choosing the person to make those healthcare decisions, I say, who do you know? Who can stomach the environment? Who knows you? Who knows what you want? I had a funny guy tell me once that he named his aunt, and he didn't know that she was very opposed to modern medicine.
Oh.
Just she was very she was of the school of thought that she didn't want to have all forms of medicine to at his disposal. So be very careful that you're choosing someone who will take your wishes seriously.
And in the ethical world, the distinction we make is somebody who can actually do what is called substituted judgment. I am willing to make the decision that you would have made, and I understand the decision that you would want made, and so that's my job. That's my legal, my fiduciary obligation is to make that decision for you. When we don't know what the person would want, we kind of go to the next one, which is called best interest, which is, okay, you know, what is in the best interest of this individual? And that's more of a kind of a collective process that we have to go through and start trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to talk to the medical team. I'm going to talk to the other members of the family and reflect on those values and preferences, which hopefully we've had some conversations about that allow us then inform our decision that we need to make. But those two things are very important. And if you're going to name somebody and you've got the opportunity to do that, the substituted judgment, the person has, you know, that Suzanne was asking for earlier, give me somebody who's going to be able to give me a clear decision about what this person wants. That's what I need to be able to make my work helpful for the patient and the family.
Laurel, I've had some people say, well, I won't name so-and-so. They'll keep me alive forever.
Right.
Well, that would be fine if you wanted that, but you need your views in someone else's mind. And that's the end goal, to have someone who will stand up, advocate for you, articulate your views. And I want to say it's not always the senior population. Certainly they're my preferred, they're my pets, as you will. But the rest of us might bump into, you know, that lovely car that you're looking at on the highway might just slam on its brakes, and there you're ending up in this scenario. You're one of Suzanne's patients. And you think you're too young to have addressed the issue. You haven't named anyone. You think incorrectly that your spouse has the power. They don't.
And we all know that the most celebrated or the most infamous cases that we have of this in this country
are all young women.
Yes.
Nancy Kurzan back in the 80s, and then Terry Schiavo just 5 or 6 years ago. 576-7798 is the number. John, what are some studies that show who is the best person to designate? If you're a woman, should it be your husband? If you're a man, should it be your wife? Or should it be a member of the family? Is there any magic formula to naming who is the right person to name for this?
There really isn't a magic formula. I think there's probably some there was at least apocryphal references to research that was done years ago that women are more inclined to name men are more inclined to name their spouses and be able to do it. So women get to speak for men. But women are not as trustworthy of their spouses simply because the men won't make the decisions that need to be made. I'm not sure how realistic that is or how accurate that is. I think that the big thing is going back to what Samantha said, is that it's naming somebody who understands you as a person, who is willing to honor your wishes and to do that. And I've had a number of experiences where families have called women, especially older women, have called and said, "Well, I'm the widow here, and I've got two kids, and I want to name them both." And I will say, you know, please really, really think hard about that. Naming co-agents is not usually the best situation. There's nothing that says that an agent can't consult with their siblings or their other loved ones in the family to be able to make the decision. But having one person is usually much more helpful than having multiple persons named with equal power, because then it forces the medical team, again, in, you know, Suzanne's work, is to have to look to more than one person, have more than one person in the room when that decision, rather than having a single person.
Suzanne, you're nodding your head. You probably have experienced situations like that, have you not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it becomes a tug of war for power between the two siblings and a lot of rivalry.
Which is part of why I say, Laurel, if they could sit down with mom and dad ahead of time and so they knew this isn't about the kid that I love more.
Right.
Hmm. So having the conversation, and we have some resources for that. And Samantha, I'll go with your law firm first. You can go to your website, shepherdelderlaw.com, and that's Shepherd, S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, correct?
Correct.
Shepherdelderlaw.com. You can also go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org to download some free information and get a free copy of the booklet, Caring Conversations. We are talking this evening about having the talk, the one where you designate someone to speak for you during a serious illness or the end of life. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 576-7798. Health Talk continues after this on News Radio 980 and now 98.1 FM, KMEZ. Welcome back. Laurel LeBeau on Health Talk, brought to you in part by Blessed Trinity Home Health Care, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. We're talking this evening about National Healthcare Decisions Day, which is next Saturday, April 16th. It's a day to make your medical wishes known during a serious illness or at the end of life. Joining us this evening, a couple of folks from Crossroads Hospice of Kansas, John Carney, Executive Director, Suzanne Morse, a nurse practitioner. Samantha Shepherd is with us as well. She's an attorney with Shepherd Law Group. A couple of places to get information, practicalbioethics.org. You can, there's a link to activities throughout the Kansas City area, informational activities where you can get more information, fill out the forms, get them notarized. Go to practicalbioethics.org, and you can also download a free copy of Caring Conversations, which will help you guide you through this process and make practical preparations. Another place to go, Samantha Shepherd's law firm, shepherdelderlaw.com, has some information there as well. 576-7798 is the number if you have a question. John Carney, we've been talking about having the conversation. How do we have this caring conversation? How do you get it started?
It's hard. It's hard for most of us. But it really is about how much you love your family, I think, what you're willing to, most hard issues in life need to be, just start doing it, just open up the conversation. There's a lot of suggestions around, trying to do it at the holiday time and that kind of stuff. I would say using the book has helped most people that I've talked to, using the Caring Conversations booklet, because it walks you through the process and takes away kind of that scary, maybe the uncomfortableness of it to say, okay, let's just start filling it out and let's see what it, and you can stop at any point along the way. The other thing that the booklet does, what really is important is for people to understand, is that it's a dynamic process. It's not a one time and done kind of thing. This is a document that lives and breathes and changes, especially as you grow older or your conditions change and maybe some of the things that you thought you wanted, a couple years ago, you don't want anymore. So if you use it as a tool to help guide your discussions with your family members, it really does help move you along. And it is a difficult discussion to have, and most of us don't have these kind of discussions. And so I think the best thing to do is just kind of take the book, open it up, and start with number one and see where it gets you.
Are there some events that you find, John, that trigger people to look into the book and to bring up the topic?
Well, I think your point earlier about, when you go to the hospital, they're going to ask you if you have this document. So any kind of an episode like that. But doing it at a crisis time is not the best for anybody.
And Suzanne, you probably have to deal with that whenever it's at a crisis time. That's not good, is it?
No, it's not good. Bad decisions are made at the ninth hour.
Right. So, Samantha, doing it when people are healthy, I think that's what you're getting at, right?
Well, I'm kind of coming at it a sideways way. What I found is the drive to get the forms is often the death of someone.
Mm-hmm.
So people walk through my door either in crisis or because they've just experienced the loss of a loved one. And I wish that were not the only impetus for evaluating who we want there to make our decisions for us.
I know I didn't do mine as an adult with my wife until my brother lost his wife. She was 35 years old. And we realized that, we had three kids ourselves and we're sitting there thinking, this could happen to us. And it wasn't just about the estate. It was about what kind of decisions we made because she had a very, very difficult death with four little kids at the time. And they were trying to decide what they should and shouldn't do. And you know, my brother had no guidance at all in terms of what she wanted. And so it was a very difficult time for them. And it really impressed me. You know, I think that it is true that many times it's an event like that that really kind of gives you the wake-up call to say we need to do this. And unfortunately, you know, and I know it happened even with Terry Schiavo's death, that, you know, hundreds of thousands of documents were completed at that time. And it really, you know, if you can do it in a time of saneness and, you know, feeling good about where we are in our lives and that kind of thing, and doing it when you're healthy, I think the naming of the agent is important and the sharing of the values. I think it's less important to talk about what I do and don't want then. I think it's more about what are my values and what's important to me.
I'd suggest some other positive life events, marriage,
yes,
birth of
definitely.
Children, graduating from college. Wouldn't that be a nice present from your parents? Here, you're graduating from college. Here's a Caring Conversations book. It's not offensive then.
Right. Or April 16th.
And that's what we're here for, National Healthcare Decisions Day, April the 16th, the day after tax day, and get it all done in one fell swoop. You mentioned Terry Schiavo, John, and Samantha, that was several years ago, but did you find that people came knocking on your door because of the Terry Schiavo situation?
I wish that I could say yes. I'm not sure what drives people to pay more attention to this now. I think it's the natural aging of our population. Most of the people who find me are children. They're children they're the baby boomers. So I can't really go backwards in time and say that. You know, one of the landmark cases was a Missouri case.
Nancy Kruzan, of course, yeah.
Yeah. So we have our history here in Missouri. And did that cause more people to have advance directives or to address the issue of naming someone? Well, statistically, still nationally, we're at between 20 and 30%.
From a legal perspective, and we've been using this segment on going through the conversation, but filling out the forms, is there anything in particular where people should start with that? Should it be the advance directive? Should it be the durable power of attorney? Do people think if they have a living will that they have it covered?
Maybe they do and they don't. I'll say my personal view, name a person. A person can be flexible. A person can take the time to speak to your doctor and your practitioners and say, what is wrong with my mother? What are the options for her care? Is this a short-term incident? Does she have a urinary tract infection? Do we need a temporary couple of days on some IV antibiotics? You need a person who can get in there, advocate, ask questions, and be a dog with a bone for you in your fight. The living will, also the advance directive, same thing. That is actually a piece of paper that says, I've given some thought to this. This particular thing, I don't like the sound of that. This particular thing, not so much. But you still need a person. And if you make me choose, I'll choose the person.
Suzanne, as the health professional, a nurse practitioner, do you like an individual who's assertive about this?
Oh, absolutely. It makes everything easier and less stressful as the medical team, the patient, and the family that's involved in the decision making, because it's cut and dry for them. It's been discussed, it's been talked about, they've had time to think about it and be prepared for when I get to that point in time that I'm going to be able to make that right decision for my loved one.
Our topic this evening is National Healthcare Decisions Day. It's April the 16th. If you have a question for our panel, 576-7798, 576-7798. Health Talk continues after this on News Radio 980 and now 98.1 FM, KMBZ. And welcome back. Lorelle LeBou on Health Talk, brought to you in part by Blessed Trinity Home Health Care, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. We're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, a week from today, April 16th, 2011. It's a day to make practical preparations for having people know what your medical wishes are should you have a serious illness or be at the end of life. Go to practicalbioethics.org for more information to download a document called Caring Conversations. You can also find a link for various activities throughout the area around April the 16th. And you can also go to the website of our guest today, Samantha Shepherd with Shepherd Law Group, and that is shepherdelderlaw.com, shepherdelderlaw.com. And our guest, Samantha Shepherd, along with John Carney and Suzanne Morse from Crossroads Hospice of Kansas, 576-7798 is the number. So we've been talking about people going through the process of filling it out. And so, Samantha, there are some legalities around it. You have this document. Should it be notarized? Should it be witnessed? That kind of thing.
Good question. And what we talked about during the break was we prefer to be overly cautious. Each jurisdiction is a slightly different jurisdiction with different rules. And we all travel to, even if it's crossing between Missouri and Kansas, we all also periodically go to Florida or California. So as a rule of thumb, we do both, notarize and witness.
And then where should this signed document be? Should it be, you know, in a bank deposit box or something? Where should it be?
Don't talk about those. I really personally have a problem with them. Often people, we have to break into them. So the serious answer,
and I'm sure you find a legal way of doing that.
yes, we do. The answer is, ideally, ahead of time, every doctor that you, and in today's world, that could be a half a dozen, but all of your doctors, I encourage my clients to give a copy, and especially the person named, your attorney, in fact, or your agent should maintain a copy. One of the things that we're doing is encouraging people to get little cards. Now, I don't sell them, so I'm not plugging myself here, but there are these cards you can keep in your wallet that they just look like their driver's license size, and they are a way to get to the cloud, if you will, the digital world, and it's just a copy of it.
There's also a number of repositories that you can actually sign up for. We just signed my mom up for one. It has all of her medical stuff on there, you know, her personal record, but we wanted all six kids to be able to get to it. Well, one of the sections of that repository is, or that website, is where we can upload and download her a PDF of her documents. So anytime any one of us is anywhere, we just have to log in and say, here it is. Did it one time. I don't right now since we've changed, but used to carry them on a flash drive and just have it in my pocket, you know, so it's there too. So, and there are a number of hospitals that offer the services in terms of electronic records now. And hopefully as we get more, you know, virtual in this world, we'll have the ability to be able to kind of get to them. Neither state, Kansas nor Missouri right now, has its own separate state repository, but there are a number of commercial ones that you can go to and find them.
So we've gone through the process of filling out the form. We've had it notarized. We've done all the legal things. We've shared it with family and friends and doctors. What if we change our mind, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road? John?
It's likely you will, and it's not a bad thing that you do. You just basically do a new one. And it's kind of going back to Samantha's point about naming the agent. It's why the agent is so important, is because, and to be real honest, on mine, I just cross out the other side of the document and just say, my wife will make all decisions. And on the living will side of the document, I say right there, please see the other side, and my wife will make my decisions for me. You know, I don't have any really checklists on the living will side, on the healthcare directive. So it will happen. There's a phenomenon known as the moving goalposts that happens. As we advance in age and sometimes in our disease process, things that looked intolerable to us at one point in our life now don't look so bad. At 50,
and that might be something like a surgery or some kind of medical procedure that you, as you say, would seem intolerable to us today, but when we're actually faced with the situation, maybe it doesn't sound so bad.
That's correct. When my dad was a stroke patient for 26 years, and he had to go in for surgery about 2 years after his stroke at the age of 54, and we had a talk, and my mom and sat down with him, and he said, you know, if anything happens to me during surgery, I don't want you to do anything heroic, no heroic measures. He survived that. You know, and then 20 years later, he had to go back in and have some work done on his carotid arteries again. And we sat down and he said, you know, they said, well, what would you want done? And he said, well, absolutely everything.
And that was kind of a shock.
It was. My mom and I were just looking at each other saying, you know, and she said, Neil, what are you saying? And it was a big surprise to her. But we realized that during the course of those 20 years, his life had changed dramatically. And what he saw as important and how he conducted his life was very, very different than it was when he had changed from, you know, two years from the point that he was a breadwinner And now 22 years later, he's in a very, very different spot. So we try to help people understand that it's likely this will change. Your values probably will not change. Your fundamental values about what you think is important, which the booklet should be able to do to help you discover, is different than the actual instruction that you're giving somebody.
Suzanne, one acronym that we hear a lot is the DNR, Do Not Resuscitate Order. Is that something that either clarifies or make things more complicated in a situation like this?
It can definitely make things more complicated because they've also instituted now a DNI, which is a do not intubate, which really muddies the water because a do not resuscitate to me should include do not resuscitate period, which resuscitation would also mean intubation and artificial ventilation. So they've now added yet another acronym, which makes it very confusing for patients, and it makes it hard for them to really understand what is going on because now they don't understand what a do not resuscitate is.
And that gets back to John's point, having an individual who knows about the values of the person that they're speaking for.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll take our final break of the hour right here. This is Health Talk, and we'll be back after this on News Radio 980 and now 98.1 FM, KMBZ. And welcome back for the final portion of Health Talk. My name is Laurel LeBoux, and Health Talk brought to you in part by Blessed Trinity Home Health Care, committed to meeting the home health needs of the people they serve. I want to thank our panel this evening from Crossroads Hospice of Kansas, John Carney, Executive Director, Suzanne Morse, Nurse Practitioner, and Samantha Shepherd from the Shepherd Law Group. And we've been talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, set for next Saturday, April the 16th, the day for people to identify the person who will speak for them during a serious illness or the end of life. And it kind of begs the question, and I brought it up during the break. What if we were able to, John Carney, have National Healthcare Decisions Day pull off a miracle? And so we have 20 to 30% of individuals now who have an advanced directive or a durable power of attorney. And that turns it into 100%. How would that change things?
I certainly don't think it makes decisions any easier. It just makes healthcare professionals, I think, more informed about who it is that they should turn to at a time when the difficult decision needs to be made. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to solve problems that we have that we face at the end of life. But it certainly, I would think, would help Suzanne sleep at night.
Would it help you sleep at night, Suzanne?
It would help a lot. And, you know, the thing is that everybody had their advanced directive. Staff, physicians, nurse practitioners could all spend more time at the bedside and doing what they do best. And that's caring for the patient, educating the family on the stages that they go through.
And Samantha, if 100% of people would have advanced directives, how would life change?
It would be a blessing. It would be a gift to the person who is named, because then they have the power to advocate for their loved ones.
And you'd love to see that.
He's looking at me like I should say no because I'd have no more work. but little does he know.
Well, we appreciate you being here. Samantha Shepherd with the Shepherd Law Group, John Carney, and Suzanne Morse from Crossroads Hospice of Kansas. Where you go for more information, practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. You can also go to shepherdelderlaw.com. shepherdelderlaw.com for more information about National Healthcare Decisions Day next Saturday, April the 16th. You've been listening to Health Talk. My name is Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening. Have a healthy week, everybody.